Hello and welcome to the 6th episode of the Right Minds podcast. It is the 21st of May 2019. I am your host, Dewey De Boer, and joining me is your regular co-host, Jesse Anderson.
G'day.
Thank you to all of those who have donated for some extra equipment for us. Got a green screen, and we're still looking for some mic stands, some lighting, and if you'd like to help us out, we would love some donations from you. If you want to support us, you can go to rightminds.nz/donate. And thank you very much to all of those who have donated. All of the details are on the website. And if you can't donate, you can help us out by sharing the podcast with your family and friends and on social media. Now, it's been like a really slow news week, hasn't it, Jesse?
Yeah, not a lot. Like, there's nothing for us to talk about.
Can you believe it?
Scraping the bottom of the barrel here.
So, it's more really a question of where on earth do we start? And if you've read the title of the podcast, you may already know where we're starting. Before we cut into the main items, you wrote an article last week saying, "No, you do not have a right to use Facebook." That got quite a bit of a response, and you were obviously talking about Paul Joseph Watson and various other conservatives who have been banned from Facebook and who are arguing that Facebook should be regulated.
The whole argument comes down to, because Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube have such a monopoly on the social media sphere, or for want of a better term, that they should be regulated for my convenience. And That's all it boils down to, is that it's really convenient to use these platforms, and we've gotten used to using them, and we've become complacent. We thought they're just going to be there forever, and they're going to be there at our disposal for free and forever. And it's just not realistic to expect that to be the case. I mean, it's not your platform, so you don't get to just use it. I mean, we started using it when we were young, and you know, when we were 12, 13, 14, and we just assumed that because it's there for free that it kind of belongs to us, but it never has and it never will. It's not a public domain. Gavin McGinnis uses the argument that it's a publicly traded company, and that's just not. It's publicly traded by private individuals. It's not an argument to say it's a publicly traded company, and it was created by an individual, and it's owned by private entities and private people. It's not yours. Go make your own, basically.
And there was a documentary that I just watched the other day. It's only just come out. It's called You Can't Watch This. And it's got all of these figures, all of these conservative figures who have been banned, from Paul Joseph Watson to Alex Jones to Laura Loomer and Gavin McInnes and Tommy Robinson in it. And the main argument that they make in this documentary, and I would recommend you go and look this up on Vimeo. It's about $4 to rent, and it's about an hour long. It's called You Can't Watch This. Its main argument is, basically, hey, these social media networks are like public utilities, and being kicked off them is kind of like if somebody took your computer away and said, "Oh well, you can still use a typewriter. You've still got freedom of speech. You've still got the First Amendment. If you know, you could use a typewriter," that kind of thing. People feel like their voice, their ability to stand in the public sphere, has sort of been taken away.
Yeah, and it's a similar situation to the whole workplace automation, where your job's being taken away, not through anybody's fault, but just because of the progression of technology. And that's how freedom of association, that's how that's progressed, and that's just the unfortunate matter of the thing. But until the government owns Facebook, you don't have a right to use it. Until your taxpayers are funding it, you don't have a right to use
it. And once the government owns Facebook, that could get real nasty real fast.
And the government will effectively own Facebook if you, quote-unquote, libertarians, force the government to force Facebook to let you use it.
Because this is where we get to the Christchurch call that Jacinda has led, and all of these governments are calling for the regulation of Facebook to get rid of, quote-unquote, extremist content. We're not really sure what that is going to entail or supposed to entail.
We know what that's supposed to entail.
That's right. They're coming for you. Now, obviously, Facebook has made some changes after the Christchurch massacre was live streamed. They were always going to do that. Nothing that Jacinda has done has changed that. And being able to live stream anything on Facebook isn't actually going to change anybody's life. It's not going to save anybody's life. It's not going to encourage or discourage anybody from doing anything. But it seems like the governments are making a move to regulate social media, in a sense, like some of these conservatives are arguing for. I don't believe that this government regulation is going to work in their favor once it really kicks in. And a lot of these social media companies are not necessarily opposed to being regulated by the government, because guess what? Once they're regulated, there will never be any competition. No. It's hard enough as it is to take on social media giants to create competition to them. Once they're regulated by the government, it will be impossible.
It's the same thing with the, kind of off topic, but the same thing with insurance companies and banks. They all put up this fake argument and this fake defense and go, oh no, please don't regulate us and force us to do business with people, because they always get bailed out, they always get tax exemptions, they always benefit from regulation because, well,
exactly, and the barriers to entry become high. Like people say, the next step is they cut out your banks, right? Banks start cancelling people's accounts. This actually started happening to some conservatives. Payment companies have started to cut them off, and well, you can't start your own bank. Why can't you start your own bank? Because they're regulated by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got kicked off the platform that's not regulated by the government. Well, you also got kicked off by the platform that is regulated by the government, which is the banks. So Bitcoin is the future, and alternative decentralized social media likely is the future as well. So we could talk lots about the Christchurch call, but I don't think there's anything useful, really.
No, other than to say it's a load of crap. It's just so stupid. It's just... It wouldn't be going over so well if the media worldwide hadn't decided that they're just going to fall in love with Jacinda Ardern. And I mean, they all love socialism. They all love socialists, and they like socialists who appear to be popular. And so the whole thing only works because she's got the media on her side as well.
And her popularity is likely to have interesting ramifications globally, because these polling companies are releasing data saying, Australians love Jacinda. Australians want Jacinda to be their prime minister. Guess what? They voted for Scott Morrison. Okay? The fact that somehow Jacinda is popular globally doesn't translate into any, at least not any wins for the left. Likely, I would argue, it actually gives people more nationalist sentiments locally. If their own media is saying, oh, we want this foreign leader to come and rule over us, guess what? They're going to vote for the right.
That's exactly right. I mean, every Australian that I've spoken to has been very anti the idea of some Kiwi lady coming in and telling them how to run the country.
So thank you, Jacinda Ardern, for winning the election in Australia. I'm sure Scott Morrison is very, very happy with you. The other fallout from the Christchurch call and related calls to bring in hate speech legislation has been I'm not sure how to describe it.
A tiff?
A spat. A little ruffling of feathers between David Seymour and the other 119 members of the government. Because, as you've probably heard, Golriz Gaharman was given police protection today because of credible threats that she's received. And they're blaming David Seymour for this, which is completely not true, because she received these threats before he actually said anything. And he basically said she is a menace to freedom in this country.
Which is 100% correct.
100%. And her views, obviously, and the views that she's pushing, that are backed up by Andrew Little and Jacinda Ardern, are a huge menace to freedom in this country. And the so-called opposition hasn't said a word on this, except for Judith Collins, who's backed up Golriz. So you've got David Seymour here standing alone against the entire government and opposition that is also part of the government, the one-party state.
The whole big government clan that bands together whenever they get to expand the government, they go, this is fantastic. I'm loving this, because then when it's my turn, I get to abuse these powers that they're gathering up for themselves.
Because we've mentioned in, what is it, the last podcast or two podcasts ago, a lot of the laws that the Labour Party are using were passed by National.
And vice versa.
And so on. So they love this stuff. All of them, they all really, really love this stuff.
And the Greens especially love it, because whenever they get to be blessed with riding in on the coattails of Labour, they also get to appeal to these big government, because they are a big government trapped in a small government's body.
That's right. It's a bit sad to see, especially to see someone like Golriz Gaharman, who likes to dish out a lot of abuse, who likes to get into a lot of fights with people, and she kind of...
Sincere on Twitter. She's horrendous.
Exactly. So
it's
this
funny.
Is,
it's funny.
Yeah, well, it's funny. But she likes to dish it out, and this is what happens. If you like to dish it out, you should be more than willing to take it. And David Seymour obviously gets a lot of this stuff as well. You can see that on Twitter and elsewhere. I know several other people in the ACT Party who have gotten this and worse. It's sad. It is sad, but are people, like, there are scum out there, and there's not much you can do about
that. It's not good to make threats, because it just muddies the waters, and it just, I mean, only an idiot would make a credible threat, because it just gives them ammunition, just gives them sympathy.
There are a lot of idiots out there.
There are a lot of idiots.
That's the problem.
But, I mean, on the flip side, when you say that no human right is absolute, you're kind of putting a big target on your head.
Well, the point is she wants to undermine one of the fundamental pillars of our society, right? All of them as well.
The main one.
It's what a disaster. We shall see how this unfolds, because we've only just got I feel like we've only got the opening volleys. We've got interviews. David Seymour has done some epic interviews against Judith Collins. He's done another epic one against Louisa Wall, where he brings up Israel Folau. And that's still going on in the media, and David Seymour still saying, hey, imagine if this guy had gotten a visit from the police and been arrested and basically said, you've committed a hate crime and you need to spend some time in jail or pay a fine and so on. And he's saying, what an absolute disaster that would be. And you've still got these Labour MPs who are saying, no, what he said was probably okay. I mean, you know, Jacinda did say that when you see this hate crime, you'll know what it is. And, you know, they're unable to tell you if hypothetically Israel Folau would have committed a hate crime under the hate crime legislation that they want.
Trial by media.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's happened. But if they bring in hate crime legislation, then would he be guilty? They can't tell you.
Fact is, yes, he would be guilty. Will they find a judge who is willing to prosecute him for it? I mean, just watch Gulriz's language. Every tweet, right? So she just sent out a tweet, I'm pretty sure it was just a tweet not too long ago, very recently, and it was something along the lines of, you'll notice that the people who are talking about free speech and identity politics are always appealing to identity politics, but she had to throw in free speech in there when the tweet was not about free speech. So, and I've noticed a few times, she throws in the words free speech all the time when it's just not related at all, but she's always trying to tarnish free speech by coupling it with something that
she is genuinely the enemy of free speech in New Zealand. Like, she's the poster girl for hate crime. if I can drag this back a little bit to Israel Folau, we have seen further developments in terms of them coming after his wife as well now. The media going after her coach, I believe, saying, "Oh, is she still on the team for the horror? You know, for." "Quote unquote," the horrible things that her husband has said, and she hasn't denounced, you know, hasn't come before the Inquisition panel and renounced his beliefs. She hasn't
bent the knee to Baal.
Yeah,
you notice the language just ramping up every day. It gets a little bit more and more harsh. It's gone from Israel Folau's homophobic tweet to just his ranting and raving against the gays and all this, but he hasn't said anything further. You know,
and all he did to begin with was to quote the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, it was called a homophobic outburst by one media outlet, and so they make it sound
homophobic
like,
rant.
Yeah.
It was a quote from the Bible.
They make it sound like he got up on stage with a microphone and just tore into the whole rainbow community, as Gulriz likes to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a Bible verse. Mm-hmm. It was a verse from the founding document of this culture.
That's a hate crime you're committing right there. You mentioned this ramping up of the rhetoric on the media, and we've seen the same thing with abortion as well now in the last few days. The extreme, having an extreme view on abortion and the extreme laws of being passed in the United States are being mentioned in the news all the time. And obviously the media is ramping up for a campaign to fully legalize all abortion in terms of up to, you know, 40 weeks, like partial birth abortion is essentially what they want to legalize. That's what they're ramping up for. And their language on that is going to the point of
mental retardation.
Well, we've got a specific example here of the MP Alfred Naro, and we're going to talk about him anyway, so this is a perfect segue into his entire situation. He shared a post on Facebook that contained the statement that said that abortion is an unholy holocaust in New Zealand. and the media were running posts about, you know, the extreme views that this man has on abortion. And I thought, okay, well, this is great. He's calling it out for what it is. He's calling out the genocide of the unborn. He's pointing out that 13,000 babies are murdered in the womb in New Zealand every year. Since it's been legal, we've had 500,000 babies murdered in New Zealand. And he's calling it out for what it is. But then the media goes to interview him.
Yeah, and then his perfect moment when some reporter asks him, do you think abortion should still be in the Crimes Act? And there was this perfect moment to just say, yes, I do. And just win over the hearts of every Christian conservative in New Zealand just before he goes to make his new Christian conservative political party. And what does he say? He says, I think the... And he just completely walks away from it.
We're having a debate about that at the moment. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Just a complete nothing.
And just, I think, in that moment alone, if you weren't already convinced that Alfred Naro's so-called party that he's looking to set up is already a flop, he just confirmed it today that he is not at all interested in starting a serious party. And we could have a debate about whether a Christian party would work in New Zealand, but you know, not with him in charge, most definitely not. You've got this news on your side, you've got the entire news cycle here, he's got, you know, the microphone, he's got the platform to set an agenda for what what potentially is a new political party, and he just completely burns it to the ground at the first opportunity.
The bases were completely loaded for him to just knock it out of the park, and he just noodles.
Ah, wow. And on the topic of abortion being in the Crimes Act, there are in fact only two sentences that reference abortion in the Crimes Act. I just want to point these out, because when people say they want to take abortion out of the Crimes Act, abortion isn't actually regulated by the Crimes Act. It's regulated by the Abortion Act. Right, it's cool. It's, you know, it's in the name there. What's in the Crimes Act are two sentences. One says that the punishment for breaching the abortion law basically is equal to or shall not exceed the penalty for murder basically. So it says if you break the law on abortion, you're committing a crime that is essentially equal to murder. This is why they want to get rid of that statement there, not because it makes abortion a crime, but because it sets the penalty for breaking the Abortion Act, which makes that crime, the crime of breaching the act, equal to murder. And they don't want that, right? That's the complete antithesis of everything that the entire abortion industry and the morally left-wing part of society want, because that's not something that they will stand for. So they want no punishment whatsoever for breaking the Abortion Act, which means that you can do whatever you like.
You can abort anything.
Partial, if they get rid of that, this is why they want to get rid of it, because you get rid of that one line, partial birth abortion instantly becomes legal without a single change to the Abortion Act, because you can no longer be prosecuted for breaking the Abortion Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the second sentence in there that they want to get rid of, as an exemption to any doctor who's acting in good faith and is acting to save the life of a mother, and so on. So basically, it gives an exemption to prosecution with the previous clause if you're acting in good faith as a doctor to save lives, okay? And you have to save one life, you know. So it's said, and that sentence puts the baby's life equal to the life of a baby, equal to the life of the mother, and to say if a choice has to be made, you can't be prosecuted for that, which is a good statement to have. They want to get rid of both of those because it sets the value of human life.
The second one has to be done away with to make the first one make sense.
Exactly. So if you get rid of one, if they get rid of the first one, the second one has to go. But that's what they really want to get rid of. They want to get rid of these two references in the law that basically say that a baby's life, an unborn baby's life, is worth something, is actually worth a life. And that's even though the Abortion Act obviously allows abortion. And then they want to blow that wide open as well. But the target in the Crimes Act is related to punishments for breaking the law.
Yeah, what we're seeing here is not only the liberalization of and support of abortion, we are seeing an active attempt at completely changing the ethic of New Zealand's law to completely eradicate any notion that abortion is anything but a very minor medical procedure. It's no longer, you know, ending a life, which boggles my mind, because I mean I'd love for them to tell me when life actually does begin.
It begins when the government decides. It begins and it ends, and it ends when the government decides it ends. Jesse,
gosh, isn't that convenient? Nice and objective.
I know, it's a wonderful standard, and you know, it is just part of the greater scope, part of the greater elevation of the government to the ultimate good, and the slide to authoritarianism, where the objective value, there is no power higher than the government. That's exactly right.
The government giveth and the government taketh away. The government taketh away a lot more than the government giveth, I've found in my experience, actually.
Yes. Now, at this point, since it's bound to be brought up in the comments, right, Jesse? Since you are my great arch libertarian co-host here, my body, my choice. Why can't I do with my body what I want to do with my body, Jesse?
Well, 100% your body, your choice. But when it's not your body, when it's somebody else's body, when I can DNA test and it turns out that it's 100% somebody else's body and not your body, and there's nothing that you can do to refute that. It's not your body. It's not.
Exactly.
Unless you have two different DNA codes within your personal body, which doesn't happen. It's not true. You don't have two heartbeats. That would be a medical miracle.
Yep. And the people who like to talk about my body, my choice, it would be great if they were to apply that to, anything else. Usually, it may be associated with sort of libertarian ideology, but the people who use this line are, generally speaking, not libertarians. Very few of the people who use this line are actually libertarians.
Yeah,
so they like to talk about my body, my choice, but they don't actually believe it.
No, and it's very hilarious how so many of these arguments that they use, no uterus, no opinion. It's like, all right, no gun, no opinion. you didn't earn this billions of dollars. You have no opinion as to how much it should be taxed. Mm-hmm. This argument can be twisted and turned to be used on practically anything, where the authoritarians want to control every single aspect of your life until it comes to you saying that you can't murder a child, and then it's my body, my choice.
And that's what. And this is where all of the arguments, everything they come up with, and they continually shift to something else, is simply to cover up this. To cover up the fact that they're murdering children, and that's not something that they want to acknowledge, or that's something they can acknowledge, and so you have all of these bizarre arguments that just get repeated ad nauseum, and they just keep shouting them, even though there's no basis behind them, and, like we've said, they don't actually believe any of these things, they will not take them to the logical conclusion,
no.
Because their entire belief system is illogical.
Yeah, as a devout internet libertarian, I have debated hundreds of people on the topic of abortion. And every single time they bring up an argument, you flatten it with a classic Ben Shapiro line, and they move on to the next one. They shift the goalposts. Mm-hmm. They will never take no for an answer.
And Ben Shapiro, you brought up Ben Shapiro. I just watching his videos on this is absolutely amazing. I would recommend it to anyone who's not convinced. And he often will stop because people will go like these one after the other, and they'll move on to the next thing. They'll keep moving, and he just says, sometimes he'll just stop them and just straight up say to them, you won't accept what I'm saying, right? You can't accept what I'm saying because there is this deep ideological divide here where you refuse to admit that human life is human life, that this baby is a human being, and that you have to take responsibility for your actions, because that's an important part. You have to take responsibility for your actions, and even if you're put into an unfortunate situation...
That is hate speech right there.
And that's where it really comes down to. And the entire concept of the sexual revolution falls apart and completely collapses. Abortion is needed to sustain the entire postmodern ideology, the entire cultural Marxist school of thought, all of it. Abortion underpins that. It is the sacrament of that particular ideology. Comparison to Baal worship, to the worship of Molech, is apt enough, because abortion underpins their entire worldview, and without it, it all collapses, because then suddenly human beings have to take responsibility for their actions in an absolute biological sense, and that's where things go. Their entire ideology is based upon rejecting reality. To accept reality is the one thing they cannot do.
Yeah, it's two fundamental ideologies. The first one is that sex should be on demand and without consequence, and the second one is that they should be able to decide whose life has value.
One of the things that absolutely blows my mind is I've seen ultrasounds of my own children at 10 weeks. Right? I've seen their bodies, their faces, their arms, their legs. I've seen their hearts beat. I've heard their hearts beat. And you look at that and you think, how absolutely amazing. And then if you think about this, there are so many people out there who would not hesitate for a second to kill that little human being right there. You can see it in front of you and you think, 100% legal, that people would murder that. And that is just one of the most barbaric things that you can possibly think of. And it really, really hits you when you're sitting there and you see that for yourself. And it's one of your own children that you're looking at. This is, at least for me, one of my super passionate issues and one of my most important issues, because life is so fundamental. And the right to life is the most fundamental right and the most important right. And it is so good to see that there's actually progress being made against the postmodern agenda in America and across the globe. In fact, abortion rates generally are dropping, and we're likely to see that Alabama and Georgia and these other states in the United States are only the beginning of what hopefully is a global eradication of abortion this century. That is my biggest hope. It is wonderful to see these signs. And sadly, in New Zealand, I feel we're still moving backwards a little bit. But that just means the time for us to move forward is coming, even if we haven't finished moving backwards yet. So now let's shift this conversation to a slightly different form of violence, and actually a slightly milder form of violence for now.
And a milkier form of violence.
And a more white supremacist form of violence, because the irony here is that the left has written many articles about how milk is white supremacy because white supremacists can drink milk and so on. Mm-hmm. If you think I'm joking, just run a Google search on white supremacy and milk and you will find lots of genuine articles from the legacy media about milk being linked to white supremacy. Now, in the UK, they've started throwing milkshakes on politicians. Tommy Robinson, an independent running for the European Parliament, has been milkshaked. Carl Benjamin, a UKIP candidate, has been milkshaked. Today, even Nigel Farage, the Brexit Party leader, he's been milkshaked, and it's been ramped up a little bit in places. Tommy Robinson has had bricks thrown at him. The Australians like to egg people, and even in the UK it's been the case. Two Australian politicians were egged. One British politician has been egged.
But they egged the wrong British politician. Yes, they did. Got done for it, man. Yes, pretty quickly, too.
Somebody egged Jeremy Corbyn and went to prison for 28 days.
Yep.
In Australia, nobody went to prison. The milkshake throwers have not gone to prison. In fact, there are people merchandising milkshake throwing.
Burger King Corporation.
Yeah, yeah. And people making t-shirts. But yeah, they're making money. They're making money out of throwing milkshakes at politicians. And you know milkshakes are only the beginning.
It's going to be fries. Mm-hmm. It's going to be burgers. What you watch.
Yeah. And like I said, in the case of Tommy Robinson, we've already seen them moved on to bricks. But for
a long time, it's been bottles of urine being hawked at crowds and whatnot. And you know, it's nothing new.
It is, but it has been ramped up this particular election cycle in 2019 more so than anywhere else. And even in New Zealand, I'm thinking now, James Shaw was punched while walking I believe in a park and walking on his way to Parliament. We've obviously got a lot of death threats being thrown around New Zealand politics at the moment. We already referenced them earlier. It seems like the initial condoning of this, because that's something we've never really seen before, I think, where people, and it started with Egg Boy, I think, people actually yeah,
people really getting on board
it, and the entire media, social media sphere, including all of these mainstream media personalities, they all like, oh, this is so great, this is wonderful. And then it ramps up, okay? And then it ramps up and it ends with because, like, politicians have been assassinated before, but never before have we had the case where this slow ramping up of violent actions being taken, even mildly violent actions being taken against politicians, as being cheered on. And it's only a matter of time before this escalates to a point where it gets incredibly ugly.
With the original Tommy Robinson milkshaking, News Hub posted an article about it. Obviously, just very, very jovial about it. Just like, hey, very light humor, whatever. You know, he says it slipped out of his hand. Ha ha, lol. And then next they posted an article, was it yesterday or was it today, where they actually show from the footage of the guy who's violently thrusting this milkshake upon Tommy Robinson. And Tommy Robinson, I'm pretty sure, got a decent hook in as well. I can't remember.
Yeah, I saw the video he get. Tommy always gets a good hook in.
Yeah, he's pretty quick as Tommy Robinson.
I do think he got the better end of that deal.
Yeah, and you have to have big balls to go after Tommy Robinson.
And same thing with Egg Boy, what's his name?
Fraser Anning.
I mean, he got a good hook in as well. He got the better end of that
deal. Yeah, he got a slap.
And I just really think that this is a terrible idea, and this is going to end really, really badly one way or another for somebody, because the encouragement of this is what is so bad. And I feel like just seeing people, for instance, seeing people laugh, even in New Zealand, at Gauri Skaharma needing extra police protection, people are now going, ha ha, she needs extra police protection. Well, that's just a flow on. Right? You can, like, it just moves on. People will continue to laugh as these things escalate globally, because the ball is now rolling towards saying, okay, yeah, actually, political violence against politicians is okay, and it's funny.
You're paying for that as well. The more police protection they need, the more money that you're spending.
Yeah, and people don't care about that.
On the flip side, could you imagine how quickly I, for instance, would be thrown into prison and the key thrown away if I were to milkshake Gauri Skaharma? Can you imagine the uproar that would be? It wouldn't be a funny gag.
Mm-hmm, no.
It would be a violent assault from a violent right-wing misogynist.
That's right. To them, that's what makes the difference. Just to wrap things up with the last bit of news that slipped in just as we were planning out this podcast. Apparently, Alfred Naro is not the only one starting his own political party. It has just been announced that the one and only Brian Tamaki is...
Bishop. Brian Tamaki.
The Prophet Bishop Apostle Prophet Apostle Bishop Brian Tamaki is starting here, maybe starting his own party, to be announced next week.
Yeah, he announced it with the very traditional way of sending out a tweet and saying, G might just launch a political party next week. Just next week. Just throwing it out there. I don't know. Again, I'll see what my schedule's like.
Yeah, I think he is milking the Alfred Naro political party starting up thing, where, you know, he kind of wants to get in on the action here.
And I'll tell you what, Brian Tamaki's one would do better than Alfred Naro's.
At this point, I would probably say yes, because last time, I think without his direct involvement, the Destiny party got like 1% of the vote. I don't think he was directly involved last time anyway. Somebody please do correct me if I'm wrong. But he likely is actually more popular now than he has been in the past.
The media wouldn't have you know that, but there are a lot of communities out there that really, I mean, they've been touched by his Man Up program, and that's been enough for them to become, you know...
loyal?
Yeah, very loyal, and the demographics that Brian Tamaki is getting loyalty from, they are a very loyal people, and their family is a very loyal family, and he knows exactly how to work them. You know, they are him. So
we shall see how all of this goes. Do keep an eye on this. Our last podcast was with Elliot Ikele from the New Conservative Party. There were some rumors about Alfred Naro joining up with the New Conservative Party. I think that's all died down a little bit, and the chances of that happening look to be a big fat zero at the moment, and with the rate things are going with Mr. Naro, I suspect that that's going to drop down to below zero.
Less than 0%.
less than 0%. I was going to come into this podcast before today anyway, saying, oh yeah, this could be interesting, this could be a thing, but I'm more and more becoming convinced that it's probably would be a terrible idea for them, and that I just don't see it happening at the moment.
I know at least one person who is very convinced that Alfred Naro is just a super duper guy, because they saw that he's a Zionist, and that's practically the only thing that I know about.
Somebody asked me, I said, who knew who Alfred Naro was a week ago? And apparently very few people do. There are some Christian communities who know him. Now, I knew about him because during the last incursion between Israel and Gaza, I saw that he participated in the I Am a Zionist campaign. And I thought, oh, this guy looks interesting. I'll follow him along in Parliament. You know, somebody who will stand up and say he's a Zionist. But it seems that beyond the Christian Zionist
movement, he's just a national MP.
Nobody knows who he is. Again, I don't know him for anything else. Like you said, I believe he's Jewish anyway, and Pacific Islander. So he seems to be quite active in those communities, and he may have some support there. But you got to get 5% to get into Parliament, and that doesn't seem like the kind of 5% making coalition that you would need. You got to bring together a whole bunch of groups to get to 5% in New Zealand. It's a small country.
It seems pretty late in the game to be.
Especially since started off the podcast by saying he's just completely shot himself in the foot by not actually taking the platform that's been handed him. He's, you know, it was set up for him. Did he want to talk about abortion? No, he doesn't want to really talk about abortion that much. And he doesn't want to talk about free speech. I mean, I haven't seen him really pipe up on
the free speech topic. No, we went after him. We went after him over the New World Order? No, the Migration Compact. the UN. The UN, that's right. That's the words I was thinking. UN Migration Compact. And he didn't reply. The guy that we did talk to from National didn't want a bar of it.
Yeah. So, what's he interested in? Like I'm genuinely asking this question. Somebody like, what is Alfred Naro about? There's silence here because
we don't know.
We really do not.
Should have read something, but
I don't think there's anything out there. I have not found anyone who's brought it. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he's like a really nice person, but that doesn't get you.
Come on the show, Alfred.
That's right. We will extend an invitation to Alfred to be on the show, and we're not shilling for any one political party. I've put out the feelers. And we will be getting people on from other political parties as well in the coming, months and years. And we do hope to have more guests on the show. I know that people have liked our guests so far. And the plan is to, at some point, at least have a short segment, even if it's like a telephone interview with somebody about some topic. But for now, we're just trying to keep this podcast rolling. So we really do hope that you have enjoyed it. We appreciate your support very much. As I've said before, thank you very much to all those who have donated. Thank you very much to all those who share around. We will be improving the quality of this podcast. We will be keeping it up regularly. And that is all for today, folks. Thank you very much, Jesse, for joining me.
No worries.
And we will conclude with our usual bit of classical music. This time it will be a piano piece from the 19th century by Franz Liszt, the Hungarian Rhapsody number 2. I very much would recommend that you listen to the entire collection of Hungarian Rhapsodies, and if you just search for Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 or click on one of the links attached to this podcast, there is some beautiful renditions of this, and it is a fantastic piano piece. I love it very, very much. That's all for today. If you do like this podcast, please share it around, and we will see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.